Welcome to the Fusion Forest Podcast, a production of Asheville FM Podcasts. This show features discussions, conversations, and interviews on various topics of the natural world, ecology, nature science, conservation, regenerative agriculture, and more. These discussions all originally air on the Fusion Forest radio show, a variety talk nature science music program that airs every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon East Coast time on 103.3 Asheville FM in the Asheville area, and can be streamed on ashevillefm.org anywhere that terrestrial internet is available. This episode features a monologue that originally aired on February 8th, talking about some of the unsung heroes of the natural world. It's a discussion of yeasts, the single-celled fungi that exist just about everywhere and underlie so many important processes in our world. And it concludes by looking at some of the emerging discoveries about the roles of yeasts in soil health and plant health. If you like the show, don't forget to subscribe to it. And you can also follow it on Instagram at The Fusion Forest. Now let's get into this ode to yeast, a celebration of some of nature's versatile, cryptic, and yet oh so important members, the yeasts. And so now I'm going to use this voice of the community to get into a rather obscure topic, the topic of soil yeasts. Now, on the way to discussing yeast in the soil, we'll start out by talking about just a little bit of background of what yeasts are, who they are, what they do. So from a very basic level, yeast is a type of fungus, one of the kingdoms of life. Also contains other biological forms such as molds and mushrooms. These ones grow with interesting, intricate filamentous structures. Their bodies grow as lots of threads that grow through their environment, intertwine with each other. But yeasts, on the other hand, while they are a fungus because of the way their cells function, their cellular apparatus, their eukaryotes as opposed to prokaryotes, which include things like bacteria, eukaryotes include things like fungi, plants, animals. But yeasts are often little single-celled things, and most of the time when they're doing well and they're healthy, they tend to reproduce asexually, meaning that they just clone themselves. And sometimes this process is called budding, because basically the yeast cell will split itself in two, and a little small cell starts growing on the outside of the original cell, and as it gets bigger and bigger, eventually a wall forms and it separates. That's typically what yeasts do when they're happy, but they can also reproduce sexually, where they find another yeast cell and exchange genetic information. And this will often happen when two yeast cells from different lineages bud off and encounter each other, and then they form a bridge between each other where they exchange their DNA and genetic information. This bridge is called a schmoo, as yeasts schmoo. They schmooze each other, or they schmooch, or they do things that maybe I shouldn't be talking about at 11:25 a.m. on community radio. But, you know, this is a biology discussion, so maybe it will get slightly risque at moments. No, that's about as risque as it's going to get. But while yeast are often thought of as doing this budding reproduction and just being these little single cells, there actually are observed types of yeast that will form filamentous structures similar to the hyphae or mycelium of their fungal cousins, the molds or the decomposer, mushroom-forming fungi that we're more familiar with. But now yeasts are very important throughout our life, throughout the world of nature. There's some pretty well-known examples of the importance of yeasts, and primarily this would be through fermentation processes that are utilized for producing food and even industrial chemicals. So, you know, the most common familiar forms of this fermentation would be the processes of, for example, brewing beer or wine or making bread. It's the act of live yeasts that through their life cycle, through their metabolism, they take some chemicals and convert them into other things to gain energy. And that's really what we mean when we're talking about fermentation, is we're talking about an organism converting something into something else as a form of metabolism and energy. So we leverage the yeast doing this fermentation process with things like sugars, and that's where you know, these common ferments like bread and alcoholic beverages come from. Yeasts can also exist and do this in more complex communities, for example, with things like kombucha we have, or even vinegars and kefir or kefir. These are all products that are produced using something called a SCOBY, which a SCOBY is an acronym for symbiotic community of bacteria and yeast. So these are all just kind of the gelatinous blobs of microorganisms, and we don't quite know exactly what they are, but we know that bacteria and yeast are involved and they're doing their fermentation. But as I mentioned before, fermentation, it can happen all over the place with all sorts of different types of things. It's just an organism converting something and getting energy out of it. So fermentation is really important within our own bodies. If you think about our stomach, our digestive system, the microbiome and all of that, the gut biome, yeasts are important players in this process in terms of helping us digest food within our own bodies, as they are with pretty much all animals. For example, beetles are the most diverse family of animals by far, in terms of that there's more species of beetles than any other group of animals, and it's not even close. And a lot of this is drawn to beetles having very unique, complex, and specific symbiotic relationships with yeasts that live inside of them that allow beetles to eat a lot of the gnarlier and funkier things they consume. Like, they're eating rotting wood and animal manure and all these other things. So, you know, there's an animal example of yeast really opening up the door for new types of food to be consumed. In human culture, besides being glorified in the fermentation process, yeasts are often thought of in the realm of causing human diseases, which they do, but as I just mentioned, there's also lots of yeasts that improve human health and are almost necessary for it. But yeasts, in some ways or another, have held a place or a role in the human imagination and mind and cultural context for a long time, even before people really knew what they were. For example, mead, which is a fermented honey beverage that's popular for many thousands of years in Scandinavia and other areas, a favorite drink of the Vikings. It was thought back in the day, before, you know, they were doing modern science, they didn't have microscopes, but they were still leveraging fermentation. Well, it was believed that when a container was filled with honey and then was allowed to sit, and then it fermented and it transformed from just honey and water and maybe some herbs and spices into a rich, potent, potentially inebriating beverage. That process was attributed to fairies. And it was the belief that as this magic concoction was left, the fairies would come and transform it into this other type of beverage. So in some ways, things like yeast might be the physical manifestations of mythical concepts that have been going on for a long time. Who are the fairies? They could be these metaphysical beings, and there could be some component that's really just a perception of the physical manifestation of yeasts and other microorganisms by pre-microbiology societies. Maybe, just a thought, I'm not going to say that's how it is, it's just a hypothesis, speculation, don't go citing that for any important reasons, but now that we've covered a little bit of the context of yeasts and who they are, how they're related to us and our society and whatnot, I want to focus on yeast in the soil, yeast that live in the soil, because they're not really that well studied. They just haven't been looked at a whole lot. And part of it is that when soil is looked at with a microscope, usually yeasts are not an abundantly observed organism. But with modern research techniques, they use genetic methods to take soil samples and just break up the DNA and read it all and then assess it to other similar strings of the DNA code that they have in databases, and they actually are identifying a lot more yeasts in soil this way. And also measuring different enzymes being produced by yeast, proteins they produce, and are able to, in some ways, identify functional traits of yeast in the soil. That's just one research technique, but now we're starting to get a little more insight on what they might be doing down there. Now, first off, they're important in nutrient cycling, because yeasts, like other fungi, when they come in contact with the surface of things like soil and rocks, they can release acids and other chemicals like that that will help make things like nitrogen and phosphorus and zinc available. And these are all essential plant nutrients. So plants can't necessarily access nutrients out of the soil with their roots very well on their own. They often employ other microorganisms to do it for them. And we're learning that yeasts have this capability. They probably have an important role in the soil food web, both for providing these nutrients to plants and as a food source for other microorganisms. But they also potentially interact in other ways with the soil microorganisms and also even build a soil structure. There's some research out there. For example, a 2006 paper published by a research team collaborating from the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa, Stanford University, and Ryerson University in Toronto. And they found that yeasts grow these things called biofilms. Now, biofilms are something you've probably encountered and are familiar with. We're basically talking about when something like a bacteria or a yeast grows in such a large colony that it actually becomes this big kind of slimy thing that you could actually see and perceive, and then it's creating this kind of gelatinous, gooey texture. Now, what these researchers found is that these yeast biofilms are actually a good food source for protozoa. Protozoa being the smallest animals out there, little single-celled animals that crawl around and eat things like bacteria and yeast. And they found that protozoa like to feast on these yeast biofilms. Not only that, that when the protozoa eat the yeast biofilms, the yeast still grow well. They actually grow better. So the yeast are feeding other organisms. These biofilms also can function somewhat as glues or gels in the soil and build soil structure, taking particles of dirt and then gluing them together so that the soil can become more of a spongy and hold more water and ultimately become the type of soil that more advanced plants would want to live in. So in addition to benefiting other soil organisms through biofilms and as a food source, there's also been a bit of research that's come out, including a 2006 paper by Manfred Joseph Gollner and a research team from the University of Natural Resources and Applied Life Sciences in Vienna, Austria, as well as the Institute of Botany at the Academy of Sciences of the Czech Republic. They demonstrated that different types of soil yeast that they had grown out could improve the ability of a symbiotic mycorrhizal fungus to grow on corn roots. And so if you're not familiar with mycorrhizal fungi, they're a type of filamentous or threaded fungus that grows in plant roots symbiotically. They grow inside of the plant roots and they kind of have to have plant roots to survive, and they feed the plants nutrients and water while the plant feeds the fungus sugars and carbohydrates. It's a very mutualistic, beneficial interaction in nature that's important to a lot of plant health. And research indicates that the presence of soil yeasts will allow these mycorrhizal fungi to grow better on the plant roots and be more successful, thus benefiting the plant and the mycorrhizae. So what was initially seemed like a two-way mutualistic symbiotic interaction, now we throw in this third character, the yeast, this little single-celled budding fungus, and it can make that interaction even better. It's almost like the wingman or something for that type of relationship. So that's another interesting thing yeast are up to in the soil. And, well, to take it to an even deeper level, here, let's go even next level. There's a few papers published in 2020. First of all, there's some research indicating that yeast could be very important in bioremediation, because these small little organisms can actually develop heavy metal tolerances and remove those from a system. They can also decompose toxic chemicals because they can function as decomposers in many of their ecological roles. But I'm going to get into some more kind of interesting, more next level thinking research that came out in 2020. Regarding yeast and their prospects to plant health. So first off, there was research performed by a team out of Thailand. The lead author was Jaturong Kumla. This is based out of Chiang Mai University, where they were isolating yeast that grew in the Assam tea plant and found that of the 42 different strains of yeast they isolated, they exhibited a wide range of interesting benefits to the plants. Some of them could produce ammonia directly, ammonia being a nitrogen source that plants will use. Some of them produced siderophores, which are structures used to obtain iron by yeast. They also speculate they could use to deplete pathogens of iron. So some of these benefits, the yeast aren't just improving the health of the plant, they're also preventing things that would cause harm to the plant from growing on them. Additionally, they found yeast that produce plant growth hormones, such as indole-3 acetic acid. So these are chemicals that trigger plants to grow more. And then they also, as I mentioned before, found that they can solubilize different nutrients and minerals, and also produce a wide range of degradation enzymes. So these are all very useful biological functions in a ecosystem, whether it's happening in plants or in the soil. And now it's being more and more proven that yeast could be providing these benefits. Now the last research I want to bring up here was a paper. This is also out of Thailand from Khasetsart University in Bangkok. A research team including Willisini Kansu, Tita Detup, and Savitri Limtong. And this is quite fascinating what they did. They isolated yeasts from a variety of different plant leaves. These would be yeasts that grow inside of the plants, but you know, they can take these leaves and then either put them on a petri dish or something like that and let the fungi grow out. So these are yeasts that were found that way. But then they took these yeasts and then they sprayed them on mangoes that had been harvested and were able to demonstrate that some of the yeasts, a few of the strains that they isolated, were able to prevent mango disease. They're able to prevent fruit rot and stop the growth of some common mango pathogens, including Lasio Diplodia, Theobromae, and Coletotrichum gloiosporoides. And they demonstrated that some of these yeasts could prevent those pathogens from growing at a similar efficacy as Benomil, which is a commonly used chemical fungicide. And they were showing that these yeasts can prevent the pathogens from going by producing antifungal compounds, by using biofilms, as we mentioned before. They can, I didn't mention that. I talked about biofilms, but yes, yeast also will form biofilms on plants to prevent them from getting infected by pathogens and to cover up wounds on them. So yes, now they're seeing that yeast could be used to potentially stop fruit pathogens. They're helping plants access to nutrients. They're helping the mycorrhizae grow better in the soil. They're cycling the nutrients. They're producing nitrogen. They're helping the plants. They're helping plant immune systems. They're doing a lot of amazing things out there. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the yeasts, unsung heroes of the natural world. Keep the fermentation going. And keep the ecosystem strong.